6 and a half minutes after 10. I'll get the time right yet this morning. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today here on the Ideas Network. Well, we're a couple of days away from a brand new year, and of course that always means the last few days of the year. You look back at the best and worst of the past 12 months, and we're going to do that this year as far as media moments are concerned. The genesis for this program was an article published on the Huffington Post titled The 10 Worst Media Moments of 2008, and we'll start there and work our way through. Here are your phone numbers, or here is your phone number, I should say, to get into the program if you'd like to chime in with what you think ought to be a worst media moment, or maybe you've got something you think is a best media moment of 2008. We'll welcome that as well. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. You can also send an email. The address is talk@WPR.org. My guest this hour is Jason Linkins, political reporter for the Huffington Post and the author of the article in question, The 10 Worst Media Moments of 2008. He joins me by phone. Good morning, sir.
Happy New Year to everyone.
Well, and Happy New Year to you, a day or two early. The 10 worst moments, media moments of 2008. How did you, have you done this before? Is this a regular column you write at the end of every year?
No, this is, it's not.
So this was the first, the inaugural one.
That we actually thought about doing it. I'm pretty sure that in the past, the Huffington Post has been in the habit of doing these kind of summative articles, but this time last year, I wasn't in the position to weigh in this way, but
Okay. They
encouraged me, and I was happy to do it. It was, you know, the first year I spent, you know, chronicling the media for the Huffington Post. It was mainly, I think, a lot of attention given to, obviously, election coverage, but I did try to salt it with things that were outside of the election as well.
Well, let's talk about the mechanics of this before we get into the list itself.
Sure.
How did, I mean, gosh, given what we had to choose from in terms of worst media moments for 2008, first of all, how do you only get 10? But second, how do you make decisions? I mean, what was your criteria for a worst media moment? How'd you pick?
Well, I'll be completely honest with you. A lot of it had to do with whether I wrote something about it during the year, because it definitely helped for me to be able to. I mean, you go back over an entire year; it's the things that really kind of like stick out in your craw, that pop to the fore of your memory when you're considering it. I literally went back over an entire year's worth of coverage, stuff that I had written, stuff that our fellow reporters had written, and did my best to sort of like crunch it down. You know, there were a lot of other people writing these same things. I considered some of the nominees that other people out there in the media sphere have written about, but in the end, I sort of coalesced around the things that I think stood out to me. I wanted to just sort of, I mean, it's a the Huffington Post was one of the one of our hallmarks is sort of a generous spirit, you know, trying to get people who are our readers involved, offering input. I do a regular Sunday morning live blog of the Sunday shows, and I think that one of the reasons that it works is not so much what I contribute to it, but what a lot of people who read along add in the comments and send emails and send great ideas. So I figured that the best way to do it would be just to hang my shingle out there and see how people reacted to it. One of the things I find interesting, of course, about this whole thing is, you know, I prepared two articles. One of the things I thought were really highlights, really good moments in the media, and one being the worst. And I find it pretty interesting that, you know, a lot of the attention has coalesced around the bad side of things. I think that we're kind of still in this sort of this age where people would prefer to drink more Schadenfreude than Chardonnay. So
that's a joke you could only make on public radio. Before we get to the 10 worst, I mean, let's
sure.
be fair. Let's talk about some good things that happened in the media this year. What would top your list?
The thing that did top my list And interestingly, I don't think I went into it with this idea that I would like make it 1 to 10 ranking, but I'm pretty excited about the organization that ended up on the top of my best list. This 538.com. I think that they did such a fantastic job. And Nate Silver, I think, is the main proprietor of the site, and he did a fantastic job, not just on level of predicting, though his calls throughout the election season were pretty sound, and in the final analysis of the way the popular vote broke down, almost uncanny. But Silver did a really good job at taking this torrent of data that streams to our consciousness during an election year, you know, a Rasmussen poll, Ipsos, Gallup, all these numbers you get hit with almost on a daily basis, and did a good job bringing it into sort of like this irrational sphere where everyone can kind of appreciate what was going on. He did a really good job. He's from Baseball Prospectus, I believe, and somewhat of a stats freak. He did a good job at like laying it out there for laypersons, people who like me, shun math as a matter of course. And I think that one of the things that perhaps is a bit understated is that he also, at 538.com, they also had this wonderful bit of like on the ground reporting where a colleague of his and a photographer went to McCain organization headquarters and Obama organization headquarters and kind of sized up what was happening on the ground in various locations throughout the country. It was a real glorious road trip. They visited campaign headquarters in all regions throughout the election season and brought this terrific underlying, you know, sort of human color to the website as well. So it wasn't just, you know, a steady dose of math and theory. It was, you know, a good helping of color and humanity as well.
Talk to me about Rachel Maddow.
Well, I think that Rachel had obviously this breakout year. I think that one of the things that I think people celebrate, you know, especially folks who are Obama fans on the left, they celebrate the fact that there's this very decided progressive voice now with her own show at MSNBC. She's a very smart woman, exceedingly smart and exceedingly gifted at reaching the public. Her manner is brisk and officious, and she's fun, pleasant to listen to. It's not a yelling heads operation that she runs. I think that it's definitely been an ascension that I've cheered, and I predict that people will be very much on board with her show at MSNBC, and I actually believe that it's could become to be known as a menu where people of very disparate points of view will feel comfortable coming and sharing their opinions.
Just for those who don't know, Rachel Maddow, she was she had a radio call-in show on Air America, and then she was a frequent contributor on Keith Olbermann's program, I believe,
yep.
During the campaign, and then she got her own show following his on MSNBC. So you've got Chris Matthews followed by Keith Olbermann, and then Rachel Maddow as their kind of primetime lineup there on MSNBC.
Yeah, and she's been a rating success so far. Hopefully it will continue.
Is MSNBC kind of the counterweight for Fox News now? Is that the way it's being perceived?
Well, you see things going in that direction. I don't know if I wouldn't put any kind of like exacting stamp on it. I think that, but I definitely think that, you know, if you put a gun to my head and said, what's going on with the marketing of MSNBC, and you just wanted a glib response from me, I'd say, well, it seems to be that they're doing some kind of counter programming to what Fox has been traditionally known as. Whether or not that will be what they come to be known for a year from now is up in the air, and I would suggest that there's probably some real subtle differences between people who appreciate Rachel Maddow's show versus people who appreciate Keith Olbermann's show. I'm a much larger fan of her operation than I am of Keith's.
Keith, how dare you, Olbermann?
Yeah, and I think that I've been somewhat outspoken in my dislike of the 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue show that runs between the two playings of Hardball. I think it's a pretty uninspired program, and I don't know what kind of future it has. And of course, in the morning you get Joe Scarborough, who's I don't think anyone's going to confuse him as a dedicated Air America style leftist. But I whatever I think that ultimately this is a corporate news organization. They have to get the ratings. They have to succeed in the marketplace against CNN and against Fox. I think that the interesting the interest to me is what does CNN become in this? Do they return to sort of a studied neutrality? Do they try to game the take it in one direction or the other? I think it could be quite interesting.
Well, it's interesting to me, and again, this is kind of some insider stuff here because I've been involved in radio for many, many years and on the programming end of it, but to watch how cable television programming mirrors radio programming in terms of the decisions that programmers make about either picking a niche and super serving it or trying to become all things to all people, and it should be interesting to see how that plays out. Well, I want to get to some of the worst because I'm all about the dirt here. So I'm only kidding. Stop. No. Don't send me any emails now about this. Your 10 worst things that sucked out loud in 2008 Media Edition. The economy kills everyone. That's the number one. Talk about that.
Well, there's a level that I look on what the overall economy is doing to the media, and I see it as a professional who despairs at some of the choices that have been made, like the way CNN has sort of killed off their science reporting department, especially at it seems so inopportune considering that I think that the incoming administration is going to be much friendlier to scientists and the sciences, and indeed, President-elect Obama has appointed a number of scientists to key positions. It just seems inopportune. And at the same time, I also think about it on a personal level. There have been so many people who, I sort of like came up really admiring who have lost jobs or been laid off. As a person who obviously you want your friends to do well, I think personally it makes me sort of despair. I remember, funnily enough, there was a moment this year where the blogger at Comedy Central paid me a very deep and humbling honor. Describing the Sunday morning live blog I talked about as one of the funnier things on the web, and he said a lot of nice things about me, and it was very flattering, and I felt very good about it. And on that same list, he was talking about the five funniest political bloggers. On that same list was a woman who I sort of see as sort of, well, I think that I consider her sort of a mentor of mine, Anna Marie Cox, who founded Wonkette and went on to work at Time magazine and was at the time also writing for Radar magazine. And another guy by the name of Alex Balk, who for a certain generation of bloggers, people sort of looked up to him as a guy who, with an exceedingly active mind, a brilliant intelligence, a brittle way of using language, we all sort of saw him as like one of those blogging godfathers. Well, the week this thing ran, it was very bittersweet because I was happy to see myself, so honored. But then a few days later, Radar magazine folded. And at the time, Alex Balk and Anna Marie Cox both worked for them. And you know, it really hits home. I mean, these are people who I really took a lot of lessons from, who found themselves outside of employment. And I've had a lot of other friends in the same position. So it's, you know, it's sad. And I think that, you know, it's something that everyone is feeling throughout this economy. It's not just media personnel who are losing their jobs. It's, you know, it's hurting everybody. And, you know, I think one of the reasons I put it up there was just to sort of, like, you know, bring it home to something that was, like, larger and more important than just, you know, someone saying something stupid on TV.
Well, like, that never happens.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
Well, it happens
that will continue in good economies and bad.
It happens on the radio, too, and I'll admit that I've been a perpetrator of that from time to time. Open microphone, insert foot in mouth. Yes, chew vigorously and swallow. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take some phone calls. People have some ideas of their own about the best and worst of media of 2008, and you could be one of them. We still have an open line or two for you. 800-486-8655 is the number to call. 800-486-8655. We're talking about the 10 worst media moments of 2008, and to a certain extent, the 10 best media moments as well. And you can join us at 800-486-8655, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. My guest this morning is Jason Lincolns, political reporter for The Huffington Post. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 24 minutes after 10 o'clock, John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this morning. Here's what's coming up later on the Ideas Network. In many countries, the taboo against homosexuality seems to be eroding, even as the debate rages on. Proposition 8, the UN and the Vatican are keeping the issue on the front page. Should gay rights be included under the Universal Declaration on Human Rights? Join Gene Faraca after 3 on Here on Earth. That's coming up on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about the media, the best and worst of the media in 2008. My guest, Jason Lincolns, political reporter for The Huffington Post, and he wrote an article that caught Rhonda Fanning's eye, the 10 worst media moments of 2008. That was a follow-up to the 10 best media moments of 2008, which we're also discussing here this morning. You can join us and give us your best and worst of the media for the past year, whatever you think it might be, 800-486-8655. Let's go to the phones and take a call first from Ben, who's calling us from the Twin Cities. Ben in the Twin Cities, you're up. Go ahead.
Hello, is anybody there?
Yep, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I mean, I want to make kind of like a simple comment about what your guest is talking about on the radio right now. I think my own opinion about the worst media moments of 2008 of this year would have been the total spin of the entire financial crisis up until late September. Because there was a lot of reporters saying that there was no problems with the financial institutions, like on CNBC and CNN, until the stock market started to go down in late September. So I was wondering what your guest has to say about that type of assessment. Thank you.
Well, Jason, first of all, you actually, in your 10 best, you actually use this. This is an issue where you pointed out Peter Schiff, who talked about the economy and was talking about the bad things that were going to happen a long time before anybody else was. Well, what about our caller's comment that most of the media was spinning this story very positively up until September?
I couldn't agree more with your caller. And yes, I kind of used a little bit of jujitsu and sort of like summing up how badly the media generally got the financial crisis by, in the 10 best, highlighting someone who continually went on the air warning of what was going to happen in the financial crisis and literally was mocked to his face by a number of individuals who he shared airtime with. I would encourage people to, if they seek out that article, to 10 best media moments on Huffington Post, to click on the YouTube compilation that I provided. I can't take credit for making the compilation, but I've pointed out in a couple of occasions as a fitting example of a guy who got what was going to happen precisely correct. and yet was all but shouted down wherever he went. I think that yeah, there's no question that it was not a good year for financial media. People were encouraged to invest in all the wrong things practically right up to the last minute, and I still remember the week before Lehman Brothers failed, the way CNBC sort of treated it like it was, you know, almost like an NFL playoff game. What could happen next week? It seemed all but certain what was going to happen was that Lehman Brothers was going to fail. And the treatment of these major financial failures, I thought was everything in advance was far too glib, and everything afterwards, it's almost as if the I think Jon Stewart did a really good job making fun of how CNBC would deploy like 12 people in boxes on the screen to try to like be a counter lever to how badly they got it in the first place. You know, they were compensating with quantity over quality. But yeah, without a doubt, it was a terrible year for financial media. But it's not to say that there weren't some people who got it right. It's just that they don't get the credit they deserve.
Let's go to Larry in Milwaukee next. Larry, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, you may have, this is for your guest, you may have covered this this morning, and I missed the first part of the program, but I consider Amy Goodman, you know, the most important alternate source of news we have on the media, and I, Maddow and Oberman are good, they perform a puncturing function for people like O'Reilly and Limbaugh. But I'm wondering where else could we find people like Goodman in the media? And I don't mean websites, but I mean, could you compare, for instance, with Western Europe or the Asian press, Deutsche Welle, BBC, Guardian? And that's my question. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Well, what about it? Where's the equivalent of Amy Goodman other than Amy Goodman?
That's a good question. I feel ill-equipped to answer it, especially if we're not going to bring websites into the mix.
Well, while you're thinking about it, I moved out to the country and didn't get cable anymore, and so I got one of the satellite television services. I'm not going to say which one. I'm not in the business of promoting business, but I got satellite television, and part of the package, I can't remember what the name of the channel is, but Amy Goodman is on it, and there's also something called Grit TV. I'd never heard of before, but apparently it's available on mass distribution systems like the satellites and possibly some cable systems. And there are a couple of reporters on there. Most of that tends to be they're basically talk shows that are on that there's video for. Amy Goodman has people in the studio she interviews. So does I can't remember the name of the woman who's the lead, sort of the anchor for this Grit TV, but it's really an alternative viewpoint on the news, and it's kind of interesting to watch if you want to get a balance of the range of opinions that are being expressed in the media. I think you'd probably need to go to that one too, just to make sure you were getting everybody.
That does sound interesting. I think that on the web, if you're looking for alternative viewpoints, I would start there and then work my way through. I think that one of the CNNs and MSNBCs of the world, I think they all still have to make a dollar, and there's compromises along the way, and I hesitate to say that any of them are bad because of that or good because of the way they overcome that. But if you really want a riot of opinion, if you want to get alternative viewpoints, you've got to look at alternative venues. And right now, the World Wide Web remains just a yawning, fertile ground for that kind of thing. Of course, there's still the need to separate wheat from chaff, but I think that it's incumbent on people to make a good exploratory mission into that sphere. And I think that probably if you're an Amy Goodman fan, you could start there. Just pay attention to the people that she cites as sources, and seek them out for a little bit more of even more unfiltered news and opinion.
Let's go next to Bruce in Milwaukee. Bruce, good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hi, Bruce. You're on the air. Go ahead. You'll have to turn your radio down or off. There you go. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. In terms of media, poor coverage, I'd call it inappropriate coverage, was the total overemphasis on Sarah Palin and Joe the Plumber. I mean, the media created these people from nothing, and at least with Sarah Palin, they sort of let her go and dropped her like a dead fly. But the media creates this, and, you know, they don't give us a chance to look at anything else. And so I think the coverage of the GOP convention and other factors is just, you know, so inappropriately done, which is why you do have to look at other alternatives to get real information that's of value.
Okay, Bruce, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, to touch on that, you know, people come to me all the time and ask, to sort of bottom line what it is about the so-called mainstream media that leaves people feeling off-putting. And it is the ascension of things like Joe the Plumber that I think leave people a little bit just sort of alienated from a world in which they're looking for information that's vital to their lives. One of the things that I put on my list of 10 worst was this
lipstick
day where everyone was talking about this lipstick on a pig comment as if it had suddenly become some sort of like sexist insult to say, as opposed to a common colloquialism. And what I would say about that, in reference to, I certainly was able to tell in the last caller's tone of voice that there was a certain resignation, is that I think that the traditional media has, especially during this election season, proved itself to be far more adept at monitoring activity than evaluating achievement. If there was busy work to be done, they took to it with great aplomb. If there was a level of depth of analysis that was warranted, they shied away from it. And I think that's unfortunate. I think that many of the most celebrated coverers of politics are the people who do little more than elucidate the campaign TikTok and chat about various chess moves that are being made.
Isn't part of that because you've got this 24-hour news cycle? You have, I don't know how many cable news networks now. I've lost track, but there are a ton more reporters who are now on nationally who would be regional reporters at best. And I don't want to name any names, but let's face it, there isn't enough talent to go around for all of the news hole that needs to be filled. And what you end up with is people just start imitating one another. Oh, that person, they covered that story, so we have to get that too. And you have this relentless pressure to fill the next 5 minutes with something, with anything. And so you get a lot of these easy stories because everything's right out there, and you can grab that and get it on the air, and you dress it up, put a lot of graphics with it and dramatic music, and you give it a big headline, and all of a sudden you've got a news story, and then everybody else picks it up too, and it's all over the web, and people just start repeating what they heard instead of going to primary sources and actually finding out what really happened.
Yeah, great point. And, I have to take a step back and say sometimes perhaps what leads me to my criticism is the fact that, you know, as someone who's covering this, I'm absorbing this stuff in a much larger dose than most people. I don't think most people, for example, come into work and turn on all three cable news networks and like have them running full tilt the entire time they're there. I certainly wouldn't recommend it. I can tell you that one of the things that just grew depressing was, you know, a network like MSNBC would essentially take one shiny little ball, and then they would play with it all day. You would have, you know, a three-set panel discuss an issue, and then they would break away for, you know, maybe a little bit of breaking news, maybe a pull away from someone giving a speech. But, you know, 15 minutes later, there'd be a two-set panel talking about the same issues that the three-set panel just talked about. And pretty soon, panels were simply talking about what other panels had previously said. And so it's a, you know, it's a, they counter the depth of the news hole needs to be filled with these kind of like self-perpetuating ideas that grow throughout the day. If you spend, you know, 6 hours watching it, it can get very depressing. But I think that probably the higher minds behind these news organizations figure that if someone's just going to tune in for 15 minutes, better hit them with whatever you've been hitting everybody with all day.
We have lines available if you'd like to join the program at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We are taking calls about the best and worst of the media from 2008. Before we take another call, though, I want to follow up our discussion we just kind of concluded with. You point out one of the things about worst media moments was the endless talk of the gender card, and you had a real interesting point that you made when you compared the candidates and how they used their backgrounds, and Hillary Clinton. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, it seemed to me that there was a lot of talk throughout the year about, you know, how the coverage was sexist in many different ways. It was a mixed bag. Some examples that people frequently brought up were pretty weak tea. Others are very strong. But I remember at the beginning of last year, as the primary season started, there was a lot of talk about Hillary Clinton playing the gender card. I think probably one of the key moments there was a lot of talk about her supposedly welling up with tears in New Hampshire, her piling on ad, and I think that one of the things that was cited as far as playing the gender card was a speech she gave at Wellesley where she simply encouraged the student body there to you know, understand that the education they were receiving were going to make them competitive, and that term gender card just repeated itself again and again and again. It got to be like a nut inside a tin can with me. And one of the things I found a little bit absurd was that, you know, there's no question that, let's use Rudy Giuliani as an example because I think he's the easiest one. There's no question that the elevation of Rudy Giuliani from mayor of New York City to national figure to plausible presidential candidate was in large part due to his coincidental proximity to the September 11th attacks. I don't think any sane person would question that. This doesn't mean he doesn't have qualities that other people find either attractive or not attractive, but I don't think there's any question that that's, you know, the large part of what Giuliani brings to the national stage is this sort of credibility that comes with, you know, having walked around the streets of New York City that day. He's allowed to do that. He's you know, generally allowed to make his case that way. A guy like John Edwards is able to talk about how he came from working class roots, son of a mill worker. Say it again and again and again and again and again. And that's okay. But the fact that Hillary Clinton, it's just not okay for her to, like, take an advantage that she happens to have achieved naturally by having a perspective that's different from everybody else and being a woman, the only one up there on stage, that just seems absurd. If there are advantages to be gained from being a woman in politics, then why can't she use them? And more to the point, it's not as if we live in a political culture where candidates for office are simply, you know, shedding themselves of their natural disadvantages. It's not like Rudy Giuliani said, you know what, let's not talk about September 11th ever, because I think it'd be unfair to everyone else who wasn't walking around Chamber Street that day. You know, no, we live in a culture where politicians seize every advantage they can. And so to suggest that, like, Hillary Clinton needed to play by some different set of rules was just pretty mendacious, I thought. And yet you heard, you know, people talk seriously. It's like, is it right for Hillary Clinton to be playing the gender card? I thought it was pretty absurd. And I think that it was the foundation. I think those ideas, that sort of nut of an idea that Hillary Clinton somehow should have shed herself of those advantages, I think that was the foundation for all the other subsequent charges of sexism, right or wrong, after that. It was just a sort of like toxic moment in the discourse that grew more toxic. And I had to think that, you know, certainly there might be people out there who weren't fans of Hillary Clinton, but I like to think that there are probably still fans of women and fans of women running for political office. And to, you know, salt the earth with that kind of weird talk put everyone at a disadvantage. It was a very bad moment, I thought.
Jason Linkins is my guest. He's a political reporter for the Huffington Post. We're going to take a break, and we've got full phone banks, so we will take phone calls when we come back. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today. You are tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's just about 10:45. Coming up after 11 o'clock, personal fitness trainer Dustin Maher puts Larry Mueller through his paces. He has advice on regaining and maintaining fitness during the holidays. That's coming up after 11 o'clock this morning. Well, this hour we're talking about the best and worst of the media in 2008 with Jason Linkins, political reporter for the Huffington Post. Full phone bank, so let's go right to the phones and take a call first from Sean in Stevens Point. We'll get Sean in Stevens Point in just a moment here, as soon as somebody presses a button someplace. Well, maybe not. I don't want to belabor this point because it... okay, there we go. Now I'm seeing some progress. Sean in Stevens Point, let's take that call. All right, well, I don't want to belabor the point. We were talking about the gender card, and you talked about it as something that affected the whole campaign. And what you would have to include in that, the accusations that any negative press coverage of Sarah Palin was inherently sexist.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, I think that the problems that arose in the coverage of Hillary Clinton beginning of the year compounded the problems toward the end of the year. One of the things that I found very interesting lately is, of course, in New York, you have Caroline Kennedy. I guess we'll put in quotes, running to be perhaps appointed senator of New York. And a lot of people have talked about, have made comparisons between her and Sarah Palin. And it's of interest to me because I think that there may be sort of a general attempt to sort of zero the balance going on in the way the press has been covering Caroline Kennedy. I talked to someone about this today, and I said that in the end, one of the problems with you know, assessing the coverage of Caroline Kennedy is that, like, all the parties in the room seem to be a little bit wrong. But I think that there was a breakthrough moment in the coverage of Sarah Palin that came from an outside source that allowed people to start to cover her with the idea of, okay, maybe seriously the answers this woman's given to these questions expose, you know, a fundamental lack of what needs to be on hand to be vice president. And I think that if Tina Fey from Saturday Night Live had not come along to make it okay to even suggest that there was something amiss with Sarah Palin, it may have been a different story. But yes, I think that the accusations that the media and doing due diligence when they actually started to sort of do due diligence on Sarah Palin being a product of the same sexism was a misanalysis, but it's a misanalysis that stemmed from having, you know, seeded the earth with a lot of bad ideas in the first place. That was a rambling and terrible discussion of the topic. I hope that made some sense. Otherwise, you can put me down for one of the bad media moments of 2008.
Yeah, well, it's too late. You already covered him. Sean in Stevens Point, we have you now. Sean, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, good day, guys. Yeah, I just wanted to bring up a previous caller had brought up an alternative voice out in the media besides Amy Goodman. And there is a news source, The Real News. It's on YouTube. I forget who the main host or the name of the guy is, but they seem to have a lot of coverage that's a little bit more balanced and things that the mainstream media isn't covering, sort of like Zbigniew Brzezinski being Barack Obama's main chief foreign policy consultant, and Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote a book called The Grand Chessboard back in 96. It covers in detail what his plan of he's been a part of the inner workings of the government dating back to like the Nixon administration and closely aligned with like the Trilateral Commission and the Rockefeller family. And it's very interesting to hear that kind of perspective to see if this is the kind of foreign policy that we're going to be dealt in his next administration. That was about it.
Okay, Sean, thanks for the call.
It seems almost a cliche, but I think that one of the best ways of getting a different perspective on what's going on in our own country, of course, is to always go outside and read sources from outside the United States. And the London Guardian remains a newspaper I go to all the time. And I think that if you like Amy Goodman, you might get into Michael Tomasky, who blogs for them. I can tell you that, you know, a few years ago, I went on my family took my wife and I and the rest of our family on this this cruise, and in our stateroom, we got CNN International on television. It's not something I get to watch at home, and I almost didn't ever leave the room because the texture and the voice of the news is so different. I kind of just got to the point where I was like almost like grooving on it. You know, when you find those outside sources, they can become, you know, quite addictive and appealing. And, you know, like I said, it sounds like a cliche, but if you want to, you know, sort of like take yourself out of your comfort zone, it's always good to read what other people are writing about our own country.
Well, it's interesting. I didn't really start to look outside the country that much for news until the whole thing blew up in the Balkans in the 90s. And all of a sudden, I'd like to get a European perspective on this. And there are a lot of online newspapers. There's an English language daily in Copenhagen. There's another one in New Delhi. There are several others. For the Balkans conflict, I wanted to see what the Russian idea was, and so I went on to Pravda's website, and that was pretty interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, there's a point of view here in all of these papers, but you get a different perspective, and you can kind of mesh that with what you're seeing in this country, and somewhere in there is there's probably some truth. Let's try to take another call and see if we can get Jeff from Winneconne on the line. Jeff's been holding for a long time, and thanks, Jeff, for your patience. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing, guys?
Well, pretty good so far, but we're not done with the hour yet, so go ahead.
Well, the thing of it is that everyone is looking for the truth, and on MSN and NBC and all that, it's all American propaganda right now. I hate to say that P word, but that is what's been going on since Nixon, when Daley killed all the hippies, and I'm sick of it. I have to look for other alternatives for news, and I think that everyone is looking for that, for the truth. I mean, you know, you can look at 9/11 and see that truth was faked there.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Let's try Joe in Milwaukee next. Joe, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm currently a journalism student at UWM. And, you know, I'm 54 years old, and I took up this study because, you know, I've watched the media, news media, deteriorate in my time. And I'm considering the media study area of the journalism field. And in analyzing the coverage, I just, you know, we're not there yet. I've called your station a number of times to ask why don't they put Democracy Now! On the air. That's, I agree with a previous caller, that's some of the finest journalism taking place in this country right now. And as far as a bad media moment, I think that this financial meltdown, we're still not being served by the coverage of that, because all the coverage is about the best way to prop up this fundamentally flawed and unsustainable system of constant growth. We're not being given any alternatives to you know, how a society could function economically.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Want to comment, Jason?
I think that one of the ways that I think the press is going to either distinguish itself in 2009 or fall on their face in a dramatic way will be how they cover the process out of this economic decline. I can't stress that enough.
Well, what about the caller's contention that the coverage that we get is pretty much how we're going to prop up the current system? There isn't much discussion of any alternatives. I don't know what exactly those would be, but most of the discussion is, well, how do we take the current system and somehow or other get it back into working order, rather than any discussion about some fundamental changes that might get made to go in a different direction.
I think that there's a lot worth exploring there. I mean, I've seen credible people on the air talk about the need to prop up home prices, which seems to me fundamentally at odds with what actually needs to be done. I've seen Mary Shapiro, who Obama's appointed to head the SEC, spoken of without a lot of the kind of critical coverage I would expect of someone who didn't do a very good job overseeing the agency that she was appointed to prior to Obama tapping her.
Which was what?
I think that in 2009 they will either do a good job distinguishing that, or they'll continue to fall on their face. And yes, there's a certain level of, you know, will we learn lessons that should be obvious to us? What aspects of, you know, what good investor consumer habits will be espoused on the air? I mean, it seems to me like we're in a position where, you know, to get our way out of this decline, we have to encourage saving and production as opposed to buying everything on credit. And when people come on the air and suggest that, you know, we need to, you know, bail out home builders, I mean, that just seems a little bit... It just seems a little tone deaf to me. The best thing I think that could happen to the housing market is for us to sort of like get down to a rational level of what these homes are worth, as opposed to propping up the inflated value of something that has, you know, taken on the entire, you know, has collapsed the economy like a tsunami. It's something that I have to watch out for too, because I would not suggest that financial news is anywhere near my forte, but, you know, what I try to do is educate myself in that respect a little bit. And I think that one of the things you have to worry about going forward, and this is put to me by a couple relatives of mine who work on Wall Street, said in 2009 we need to be sure that more people realize that the people doing the regulating are not nearly as intelligent as the people they're trying to regulate. There's a big gap in brain power between those two forces. And if they're not brought into sort of, you know, rational equivalence, we'll see these Bernie Madoff things again and again and again.
Well, that, you know, that's the really scary part.
One of the things that they talk about is that, you know, Bernie Madoff didn't come out of the blue. There were people warning against it.
Well, and there were warnings, and no one seemed to believe it, and it was one of those kind of hide-in-plain-sight sort of things. He was almost daring people to find out about him. Well,
really
we're out of time, and I don't want to bring up any more topics, so I'll just say thank you, Jason Linkins, for being my guest this hour. I appreciate your time today.
Oh, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot. I hope people pay attention to this stuff, don't be afraid to share your criticisms with media organizations, with the people who produce that media.
Thanks to Jason Linkins, political reporter for the Huffington Post. Rhonda Fanning produced this hour. Mimi Notstein, Katie Madsen, Rob Ferret, and Steve Johnston helped out on the production from our brand new studios in Milwaukee. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. Reminder one more time, you are tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. Larry Mueller is up next.